Numbers chapter 32, and we're going to be looking tonight at some of the divisions of the land on the east side of Jordan. Your map there is a nice little map, but it isn't really big enough to be able to see it as detailedly as I would have liked. But you can recognize there the Sea of Galilee at the top and the Jordan River going down to the Dead Sea. On the east side, which is the right-hand side, is where we're going to be looking at here tonight, the right-hand side of the Jordan River. Okay?
I thought they said God for a minute. It says Gad, doesn't it?
It does. All right, we'll have to blow you up in one and send you one on email so you can see the big copy. All right, verse number 1. It says, "Now the children of Reuben, the children of Gad, had a very great multitude of cattle." Now, as we stop and think about this, what were the cattle? We always need to understand the terms. John Ray?
Probably like cows?
Well, it included cows, more than that. All the domestic animals. All right, so the cows, the sheep, and the goats, and the donkeys, all the domestic animals were the cattle. Okay? So he says they had a great multitude of cattle. And they saw the land of Jazer and the land of Gilead, that behold, there are a place for cattle. All right, so over here on the east side, they say, is the land of Jazer and Gilead, and they're not really identified here on the map, but they were the place. He said there's pasture lands there, and they needed place for their crops or for the sheep and the cattle to be able to graze. And you know, even today I was looking at some photos of Israel and trying to think of some things that I could perhaps use for future things, and there's just not much grass in there. I don't know how those poor sheep live. You know, just picking around the one clump of grass here and there, and the rest of it's dirt. And I think, oh, how can they survive? But perhaps in those days there was more of it. I don't know. But they said here there's a place for sheep and the cattle. And the children of Gad, verse 2, and the children of Reuben came and spake unto Moses and unto Eleazar the priest and unto the princes of the congregation, saying, Ataros and Dibon and Jazer, and Nimrah, and Heshbon, and Eliah, and Sheba, and Nebo, and Beon, even the country which the Lord smote before the congregation of Israel, and in the land is a land for cattle, and thy servants have cattle. Wherefore, said they, if we have found grace in thy sight, let this land be given unto thy servants for possession, and bring us not over Jordan. All right, now, seemed like a legitimate request. They said, this is a beautiful place. We've got lots of grass for our cattle. It would be a good place for us to settle down. We'll stay on this side, and we won't go over Jordan. And Moses then was very unhappy with them at the start. All right, you can see why as we read on, verse number 6. And Moses said unto the children of Gad, to the children of Reuben, shall your brethren go to war, and shall ye sit here? And wherefore discourage ye the hearts of the children of Israel from going over into the land which the Lord hath given them? Thus did your fathers when I sent them from Kadesh Barnea into the land. All right, now let's stop right there. What is he talking about? He says, thus did your fathers when I sent them into the land, the Kadesh Barnea. John Ray.
Let's talk about
the bringing
them out of Egypt.
No. Sorry? It was a story of Joshua and Caleb. All right, now what took place then?
10 of them came back to
Nuh. All right, so they went in, he sent them into the land to investigate the land. Okay? So Kadesh Barnea is down at the bottom. I don't know if you can see it on the map. Like I said, the map is kind of small. It looks pretty good on the screen, but it's not very good here. But down toward the bottom, about where it says Simeon and Judah, down in that area is where Kadesh Barnea is. And they had crossed over from the bottom, and they came up, and they searched out the land for 40 days. And as they were searching the land for those 40 days, then the spies came back. 10 of them said, we can't do it. It's just too big. The people are giants. The land is fortified. We aren't soldiers. We'll be slaughtered right away. There's no way. We can't do it. And then Joshua and Caleb said, no, we can't. God said we can. We can. We can do it. Let's go in. So this is what Moses is referring to here. He said, Are you going to be like all of your brethren that came back and discouraged the people and made them feel like they couldn't go into the land? And so then verse number 9, for when they went up into the valley of Eshcol, what did they find in Eshcol? Grapes. The big clusters of grapes are in Eshcol. So they went up to the valley of Eshcol and saw the land, and they discouraged the heart of the children of Israel that they should not go into the land which the Lord hath given them. And the Lord's anger was kindled in the same time, and he sware, saying, surely none of the men that came up out of Egypt from the 20 years old and upward shall see the land which I swear unto Abraham and unto Isaac and unto Jacob, because they have not wholly followed me, save Caleb the son of Jephunneh and the Kenizzite and Joshua the son of Nun, for they have wholly followed the Lord. All right, so Moses is upset with these guys. These two tribes, the leaders of the tribes, Reuben and Gad, they come and say, Moses, please, let us stay on this side. We'll set up camp on this side. We'll establish our place over here. We don't want to go over Jordan. And so he says, no, because if you do that, you're going to discourage the hearts of the people. That's exactly what those 10 spies did. And as a result, you spent 40 years in the wilderness. And all your parents died off in the wilderness. You don't want to do that. And so he was very upset with him. And then we see in verse number 13, and the Lord's anger was kindled against Israel and made them wander in the wilderness 40 years until all that generation had done that had done evil in the sight of the Lord was consumed. And behold, ye are risen up in your father's stead, an increase of sinful men to augment the fierce anger of the Lord toward Israel. For if ye turn away after him, he will yet again leave them in the wilderness, and ye shall destroy all this people. So Moses is very upset. He can see problems with this. He says, this just isn't going to work. If you stay over on the east side and you don't go over with us, you're going to discourage the people. They're not going to go in. God's going to get upset with them again. And when that happens, we'll all be wiped out. We're going to spend the rest of our lives in the wilderness. And Moses said, we don't want to do that. That's not going to work. And then we see there in verse number 16, the rebuttal from the men of Reuben and Gilead. Reuben and Gad. And they came near unto him and said, we will build sheepfolds here for our cattle and cities for our little ones. All right, so what were sheepfolds? John Ray.
It's kind of like big stone, some of those horn enclosures where they can keep their sheep safe.
Okay.
Predators. And
yeah, it was a fortified enclosure of sort. And they made it out of a lot of different things. Sometimes, a lot of times it was rocks because there was lots of rocks. But then they would put briars and thorns and brush on the top of it to try to discourage the wild animals from crawling over. So they said, we're going to build sheepfolds for all of our cattle. And we'll build the cities for our little ones. And but we, verse 17, we ourselves will go ready armed before the children of Israel until we have brought them unto the place, unto their place, and our little ones shall dwell in the fenced cities because of the inhabitants of the land. We will not return unto our houses until the children of Israel have inherited every man his inheritance. For we will not inherit with them on yonder side Jordan, or forward, because our inheritance is fallen to us on this side of Jordan eastward. All right, so they promised that they would go over. They said, let us build these sheepfolds and fortify the cities, and then we'll go over with you. Yes, sir?
I'm assuming they were talking about the fenced cities. It's not in our imagination. It's like a little fence. It's obviously probably talking about...
No, the walls. The walled cities.
Yeah.
Yeah. But stop and think about that. I know there's a lot of these people, right? But it wasn't just 20 of them. There's thousands of them. But building up these cities and building all these sheepfolds, it's going to take a lot of time.
Years.
Yeah, it would. I don't know that it was years, but it did take a long time. And so how much time elapsed from the time they first encamped there by the Jordan and were having these discussions until they actually crossed over and did it? God doesn't really tell us. It is in the context, it sounds like it just kind of happened in the next couple of days, but it couldn't have, because it took, would have taken, no matter, even if all the other 10 tribes helped them build the cities and helped them build the sheepfolds, which they probably did, it still would have taken months to be able to do all that. So there was a definite slowdown here, but at least they had a rebuttal that was somewhat feasible. So Moses here talks to them again in verse number 20. Moses said unto them, if ye do this thing, if ye will go armed before the Lord to war, and will go all of you armed over Jordan before the Lord until he hath driven out the enemies from before him, and the land be subdued before the Lord, then afterward ye shall return and be guiltless before the Lord, and before Israel, and this land shall be your possession before the Lord. But if ye will not do so, behold, ye have sinned against the Lord, and be sure your sin will find you out. That's a good verse to underline. Build you cities for your little ones, and folds for your sheep. All right, so here he calls it folds. Over there was a sheepfold, so same thing. Folds for your sheep, and do that which hath proceeded from your mouth. All right, now, one of the things that came to my mind as I was looking through these verses, what is missing here? All right, think about what is taking place here. They came to Moses, said, Moses, we want to be able to stay on the east side of Jordan. Moses said, you can't do that, because if you do, you're going to cause everybody to, you know, rebel against God again, and we'll all end up in the wilderness. And then they said, no, we promise we'll go over to the land, we'll do what we're supposed to do. And then Moses turns around in verse 20 to 25, or 20 to 24, and says, okay, that sounds good if you do that. What's missing?
I think Moses should have inquired of the Lord before he started.
That's what I would think too. Now, did he or didn't he? I don't know. It doesn't say that he did.
It doesn't say
that he didn't. It doesn't say that he did. But thankfully, he didn't get in trouble for it. You know, can you remember a time when the leadership of Israel made decisions like that without inquiring of the Lord? John Ray?
The Jebusites, or the... The tribe that deceived them.
Yep, the Gibeonites.
That's it.
All right. The Gibeonites deceived who? Who was leading? Who was the leader?
Joshua.
Okay. So, in the future here now, as they once enter into the land and they're settling things, they're getting going here, and just not too long after this, same kind of a thing comes up, and the enemy comes along, deceived them, and told them lies, and instead of praying and asking God for wisdom, they just made a decision to, okay, we'll make a league with you, and it ended up being a curse. Right. And so this is the first thing that came to my mind. When I read this, I thought, Moses, why didn't you say, and Moses went and talked to the Lord? I mean, a lot of times it did. But we can't say that he didn't. All right. So, and it all seemed to turn out okay. Now, one of the things that is still a puzzle to me, in Israel, even today, maybe some of you that are more up to date on the Israel map and stuff, how much of the eastern side of Jordan belongs to Israel? What's that?
Do you mean up there?
Well, east of Jordan, how much of it do they claim today?
There's the Golan Heights. I think it's the only bit. But
yeah, see, something went wrong. All this on the eastern side has been overtaken, or most all of it. So, was it really God's plan to let them go over there? I don't know. I mean, God didn't curse them. God didn't bring them down. It seemed to be okay at the start. They did run into some other conflicts later on between the tribes, but it was settled because there wasn't any wrongdoing. We'll see that later on, maybe. But, anyway, so those are some things. As you're reading and studying the scriptures, ask yourself those kind of questions and see if you can find answers for it, because that can help us to be able to be discerning as we're reading through. And so then in verse number 25, and the children of Gad and the children of Reuben spake unto Moses, saying, thy servants will do as my Lord commandeth. Our little ones and our wives and our flocks and all of our cattle shall be there in the cities of Gilead. But thy servants will pass over, every man armed for war before the Lord to battle, as my Lord saith. Now, another thing that comes to our mind here. Where did they get their arms? All right, so one of the things we can see here already, they've already defeated some enemies. All right, who are the two kings on the eastern side that they've already defeated? John Ray?
The king of Ai.
No.
That was
Ai is on the west side. Og, king of Bashan. Sihon, king of the Amorites. All right? So these are two big nations. And they've already defeated them. So obviously when they defeated them, they would have confiscated all of their weapons and all of their military abilities and things of that nature. So by this time, they would be pretty well armed. But up to that time, I don't know where they got their armor, because they didn't have much. I mean, remember when they left Egypt 40 years earlier, they were slaves and they just fled for their lives. They didn't have any armor. So now they've collected it along the way when they've had these little skirmishes and were able to defeat them. So that's a help to them. Now, it says there in that they make this solemn promise to Moses. Now, verse number 28. So concerning them, Moses commanded Eleazar the priest and Joshua the son of Nun. All right, so who was Eleazar? He was the priest, but who was he? Go ahead, Sasha.
Son of Aaron.
The son of Aaron. Okay. Now, Aaron's sons. All right, let's think about Aaron's sons for a moment. His first two sons, what were their names?
One of them was Abihu.
Abihu, who was the other one? Nadab and Abihu. What happened to them?
Killed.
Yeah, God struck them dead because they offered some kind of strange fire, and nobody really knows what that means. But they did something that they knew was wrong in the tabernacle, and God struck them dead. So Eleazar and Ithamar, Nadab and Abihu were struck dead, and then Eleazar now is the priest, the high priest now, and so Aaron's dead, Eleazar's taken over, and he and Joshua, the son of Nun, the chief of the fathers and of the tribes of the children of Israel. All right, so these are all the chief fathers of the 12 tribes, and Joshua, who is the future leader of the nation, and Eleazar, the spiritual leader of the nation. And they come together, and Moses said unto them, if the children of Gad and the children of Reuben will pass with you over Jordan, every man armed to battle before the Lord, and the land shall be subdued before you, then ye shall give them the land of Gilead for possession. But if they will not pass over with you armed, they shall have a possession among you in the land of Canaan. Done?
So these elders that were elected among the different tribes, were they chosen if they had certain characteristics, or were they just kind of like the main patriarch going all the way back to the original 12 brothers, like the elders of that generation and the elders of that generation?
Well, there was probably some of both in that. This particular group of them, I'm not sure, but sometimes God actually named them off himself. God actually told Moses, this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy. You know, he named them right off. So whether that was the same group here, I can't say for positive, but many times that's the way it was. But they certainly would have been some of the leading people, no doubt the older ones and the leaders among their tribes. Okay? And so verse number 30, we saw there that they will, and then verse number 31. So he said, if they'll go over, then that's fine. If they won't go over, then it's not going to work. And the children of, verse 31, the children of Gad and the children of Reuben answered, saying, as the Lord has said unto thy servants, so will we do. So this is a really big thing. They're back and forth, discussing and debating this thing, and they keep promising, yes, we'll do it. And they say, if you'll do it, then good, but if you don't, but yes, we'll do it. And so they're back and forth like this. And he says in verse 32, and we will pass over armed before the Lord into the land of Canaan, and that the possession of our inheritance on this side of Jordan may be ours. So they really wanted to stay on that side of Jordan. They hadn't even seen the other side yet. But they were satisfied that this side was the side they wanted to stay on. So they were determined to do that. And then verse number 33, and Moses gave unto them, unto them, even the children of Gad and the children of Reuben, and half tribe of Manasseh. Huh. Now, he hadn't even mentioned Manasseh up until this point. This is the first that Manasseh's even been mentioned. Manasseh was a large tribe, and half of them said, we're going to stay on this side too. Now, why they weren't mentioned earlier in the chapter, I don't know. But here they're included with them. So the half of this tribe of Manasseh. Now, who was Manasseh? Joseph's son. Okay. So Ephraim and Manasseh were Joseph's son. So Manasseh was one of Joseph's sons, the son of Joseph. Yeah, it says right in our text. And the kingdom of Sihon, king of the Amorites, and the kingdom of Og, king of Bashan, the land with the cities thereof, and the coast, in the coast, even the cities of the country round about. All right, and when it talks about the coasts here, what's it talking about the coasts? John Ray?
Functioning all the cities along the coast.
No.
Oh.
The Jordan River?
No.
It's a trick.
Yeah. All right, so anybody got the ability to look up the word? I didn't bring that with me. So the coast doesn't mean the beach. It doesn't refer to that. It talks about the area. John Ray will give us a definition here in a second. So the word coast. Okay? Verse number 33. But it's not, there wasn't any beach around there. All right? So it couldn't have been the beach of any area because it was all inland. And it was a long way from the Mediterranean Sea. Okay? If you can't find it there, I can look it up on my phone in a minute. All right, we'll continue on. Verse number 34. And the children of Gad built Dibon and Ataroth and Ador and Ataroth and Shophan and Jazar and Jogbiah and why am I reading these? All these big places. Beth Nehemah and Beth Haran, fence cities and folds for their flocks. So they built all these things, fence cities, and they built them up. And the children of Reuben built these other ones. And I'm not going to read all these big hard names. They're too hard. Yes, ma'am.
Back to the coast thing.
Yep.
I think the very next line actually clarifies. Even the cities of the country round about. So in the coast, comma, even the cities. So it's talking about that place and the cities of the countries around that place.
Yeah.
It's a border of some sort, yes.
Perth City and all the suburbs.
Yes.
Okay, so I'll get it here in just a second. Okay, so it was verse 33. Which verse had the coast in it?
33.
Oh, I looked at 33, and it was 32, 33. That's why I couldn't find it. 32, 33. Okay, so the coast. It's a border or boundary. Okay, so it's a border or boundary. So along the border or boundary of whatever the area was. Okay, so it's, and the reason I bring that up is years ago, I was translating with some guys in Papua New Guinea, and they came to this word, and they translated a beach. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I don't think so. It doesn't mean the beach. It doesn't mean the coastline. It means something. Yes, John Ray.
Yeah, so we were at a Trinitarian Bible Society meeting once, and it's actually interesting because the guy, I asked him about it, one of the representatives there, because they do a lot of translation for language, and he was saying that's one of the things that they're always very careful that they never translate out of the King's James, and as much as possible. He says even sometimes when they have in the past translated from King's James, it's only temporary until they can get it actually based it on the
text.
He says in translation, you always avoid translating from another translation to another language, because otherwise, you get the same issue.
Yeah. And a lot of people in our church speak another language. Yeah. And you know that to try to change from one language to another, there's always little bits and pieces missed.
Yeah.
It's almost impossible to translate perfectly. Garrett?
Well, they recommended some similar verses where it uses the same kind of word.
Yep.
And in Joshua 19:49, it says, when they had made an end of the dividing of the land for inheritance, by their coasts? So we're not talking about the ocean, we're talking about kind of like
all their borders.
Borders of all the kind of places.
Yep. Yep. So it's just good to, you know, as we're going through, you be observant and ask yourself questions. And so here they built all these other cities with all these big hard names there. And then down in verse number 40, and Moses gave Gilead unto Machir, the son of Manasseh, and he dwelt there. And then Jair, the son of Manasseh, went and took the small towns thereof and called them Havoth Jair. And Naboth went and took Kenneth and the villages thereof and called it Naboth after his own name. All right, so they've continued to conquer. Some of this land that they were claiming still wasn't fully conquered, even though they had conquered Og, king of Bashan, and Sihon, king of the Amorites. There were still towns and stuff that were not fully conquered. So they've gone in there, defeated them, and then taken over their cities and things of that nature. So then they settle into the land there. Now some principles for us today to ponder. Moses' extreme caution about the tribes remaining on the east side of Jordan is a reminder to us to be cautious about making decisions that do not have clear biblical direction. That's a big thing. You know, if you can go back to your Bible and say, you know, find a verse that clearly says that's what God said. You know, you can just count on it. And you can say, God said it, that's the way it is. And so there's no question about it. But a lot of times we don't have that. You know, let's say you're going to buy a car. And you can't go back to the Bible and say, you know, well, God said right there, you know, buy the 29 version of it. No, it doesn't tell us that. You don't find it in the Bible. So we need to seek God's mind on these things and seek God's help. And so whether Moses actually spoke with God about this, God doesn't tell us that, but he implies that he did. And so that's an important thing for us to remember. Now, as Christians, we must be very careful about doing anything that could cause others to stumble. This is one of Moses' greatest fears, and it ought to be one of ours as well. All right? He was afraid that if these 2.5 tribes stayed on the east side of Jordan, that they would cause the rest of them to stumble, and they wouldn't go back and conquer the land like God told them to, and then God would get angry with them, and then they'd all get wiped out by God because of God's anger. So that was what he was concerned of. Now, the truth there is, for us today, we got to be very careful about what we do so that we don't do something that's going to cause another person to stumble. You know, there may be things that I was just reading today in the New Testament in my Bible time. You know, Paul was talking about things that he could legitimately do and it wouldn't hurt him anything. He was talking about eating the meats that were offered to idols. He said, that's just meat. It's not going to hurt me any. And I can eat it and it's not going to cause me to worship those idols and fall down before them. But, he said, I'm not going to eat it if somebody says to me, this is meat that was offered to idols. You want to have some? Paul said, no thanks, I won't eat that. And he says, the reason is because he doesn't want to cause them to stumble. But he says, if I go into the meat market and I just say, yeah, I'll take that piece of meat there. He says, I don't ask any questions. Where did it come from? I just take it and I buy it and eat it. And it's fine. It may have come from the temple. I don't know. But it doesn't say that. And it's not going to bother me any. But if somebody comes along and says, don't buy that meat because that one's from the temple. Paul said, no, I won't touch that one then. Because I don't want to cause somebody else to stumble. He said, it won't hurt me any. But I don't want to cause somebody else to stumble. So there's a lot of areas of this life, you know, where there may be some things that you could do that wouldn't hurt you any because you're a strong enough Christian that you could say, hey, I'm not going to fall into any problems by doing this. But somebody else may see you and say, he's a Christian or she's a Christian and they did that and so therefore I guess it's okay. And it may hurt them and cause them to fall. So keep those things in mind. Now, supporting other believers who are facing difficult hardships is part of the New Testament Christian's duty as well. All right, so Moses was saying, all right, Reuben, Gad, and half of Manasseh, if you really want to stay on the east side of Jordan, you're going to have to come in and support those on the west side of Jordan and help them to be able to be what they ought to be. And so he said, you're not going to just ignore them and let them go and you know, just it'll cause them grief. And we really do. We need to help each other and support each other and be a blessing to each other. So these are some things we can learn. So any other thoughts or comments that comes to your mind that
I thought it was a fairly dicey deal, saying, let's stay here on this side, build our cities, and all our armed men will flock over the other side of the Jordan, leaving the cities sort of unprotected.
Yeah, I've often thought of that too.
It was out of left field, wasn't it?
Pretty sure that actually happened in the Bible. Didn't they do that?
Yeah,
so didn't they do that to one of the tribes? No, I mean, the Israelites did that to somebody. Where they made them all chase out and made the men all leave the city and chase out.
Yeah, that's true. But see, as Peter was saying, though, I mean, and remember, this conquest there in Canaan, it didn't last for a week or a month. It took months and months and months to conquer that. City after city after city after city after city, they went and destroyed and conquered, and they'd moved to another city, and it took months to do this. So there was a long time, and I've often wondered that very same thing, Peter. What about all the people back home? I mean, sure, they had the old guys and probably some of the young guys, and they probably said, all right, you guys do your best to defend them. But they had walled cities, and so with the walled cities, they could go inside the walled city, and they had already wiped out Sihon and Og, and that probably put a good fear of God in their minds of others that were maybe around in the area. But they probably had wiped out the two major enemy camps. So there probably wasn't anything big to be fearful of, but nonetheless.
They couldn't just run back and defend the city.
No.
Attack. It would have taken
absolutely not.
To get there at least.
It would. So that is a very good observation. So, and things like that. This is what really makes Bible study interesting, when you ask questions. And you know, as you read through the Bible, ask yourself questions all the time, and it'll just feed your soul, because you'll be able to find things and discover things that you didn't see before. And so question asking is absolutely essential to really gaining from your Bible study, whether it's the Old Testament stories or whether it's even in the New Testament, you know, and you're reading some of the principles that God's given to churches, and that ask your questions, okay?